Welcome to the duly scheduled rules subcommittee meeting, one and all. We're joined by first our clerk, Nathan Giacalone, and members Brendan Noel, Josh Prinzman, and Bill Humphrey. I hope we'll be joined by others who are interested. We have observers from the public. And what I was going to recommend is that we just take a minute before we get started into the substance of the conversation and look at the calendar, because I would very much like to try and get through as many of these issues and produce a comprehensive version of the rules before the summer, if we can manage that. I was looking out, the next meeting of our committee that's not a budget meeting is really, and some heavyweight stuff. We've got school committee on the 18th and so forth and the 19th. But I was wondering, because there's a traffic council at 6, whether members of the rules subcommittee might be willing to meet at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 25th. That's a night where we've got veterans, the city solicitor, city clerk, health and human services. And my experience has been that those are not elaborate and lengthy, although human services it can be. I think it's important to get it, think about how much time we can spend. But if we could do that, I think that might give us another shot. And then what I would hope to do is after that meeting, and because I hope we can get as far as we can tonight, but there may be some loose ends, to produce something that then can come back to the committee early June, or if we have to, before another budget meeting. But that's...
You said May 25th, right?
Yeah, Tuesday the 25th.
That works for me.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
With me.
Okay. And I don't know if we want to... I might even be able to start, if you want to start at like 5:30 that night. I don't know, folks, how much time they have, but...
I'm open to that. I just am aware of the fatigue factor because we've got meeting on top of that. So why don't we say presumptively six, Susan, we're just saying that schedule the next meeting before the meeting on the 25th, which would be Tuesday. Okay. At 6 o'clock.
Okay.
All right. And
Susan, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Lyle, but Susan, Lyle was saying that he wanted to try and get a fairly comprehensive report before the summer, which I think is a good goal. So I think that's why we were trying to schedule some times now.
Let's build time and then have a document we can all review as sort of a recommended set of changes to send up to the full committee. Right now we're talking through concepts, but we haven't really gotten to language. But I want to get to language as soon as we get through as many of these concepts. Some of them are just good editorial work that Susan, you and Josh have already done on some of the edits. I've got some. But that are not there yet, but they will be. So what I was going to suggest is that to take a look at my memo of things we haven't at least discussed yet, talk about those, and then go back into the annotated document and then talk about a few of those that we haven't discussed that are not in my memo, but are part of the conversation, to just see how far we can get through those questions that you all have all raised, and then see where we are. So that's because we've got a break. We have a hard stop at 7 or 6. I usually say 6:55 so that we can have a break before we start the Programs and Services Committee meeting. So is that you all comfortable with that? Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of questions we have not yet discussed, which one is the question of public comment. And just to provide background from members of the public who may be watching that are not involved with this process all the time. Under the open meeting law, when we have a duly called open meeting, which is what all of our city council and committee meetings are, the open meeting law says that public or others other than the members of the body, which is the committee or the full council, can participate to the extent that the chair elects to do so. There's no right to do that. There are, for the benefit of the public, certain times when the city council by law is required to have a public hearing. So for example, when we have land use special permit requests, those go to a public hearing. When we have zoning changes, those go to a public hearing. They're by law. There have been cases where chairs have not had a formal public hearing, but have treated it like a public hearing for comment purposes. We did that. I think the chair did that when we had the discussion about the Columbus Day holiday, for example. So there are opportunities that can be entertained, but not as of right. And just to put a context, the school committee has had a practice, if my memory is correct, and Counselor President Albright can remind us, of occasionally or maybe regularly having public comment before anything starts.
Yeah, I think it's the start of every meeting.
Start of every meeting. Now, our rules do not provide for that. And part of the concern in the past, I would just say historically, why we have not put a public comment period in front of our work is because we have so many meetings, as opposed to the school committee meets once. We meet multiple times, sometimes each week, and then the council meeting. So just in terms of getting our work done. But this is a question that has been raised. And most recently, I was just reported to me by a citizen who just said, what is the public comment involved in the budget? Is there any place in time where people can testify about the budget? We have a testimonial opportunity, usually around setting the tax rate, if my memory is right. But I don't think we have a formal opportunity to testify on the budget in committee of the whole or in individual committees, although individual chairs can certainly entertain comment. And I think we did that last year in some way in terms of the police budget, if I recall. So that's the sort of conceptual question I wanted to put in front of us. And members of the committee have comments about whether we want to do anything formally or just leave things the way they are. Councilor Humphrey, and then President Albright.
So I do think there should be a public comment opportunity with regard to the budget, similar to what you were just saying, comparing to the tax process. It's, you know, potentially you could have people like come and talk to the committee when a particular department comes up, but that's really kind of starting to ask a lot of the people who are, you know, following this. So I think it's maybe beneficial to have the whole council hear people's, budgetary comments. I don't know that we necessarily need like a standing public comment in the way that the school committee does for other things, just because in my experience, those public comments at the school committee tended to not be very helpful either. There was a lot of people coming to just kind of rant about something that didn't really have to do with anything on the agenda, and they just wanted to be heard. And I just don't know that that's necessarily productive when our meetings already tend to, you know, run later and be kind of opaque to people who are watching and so forth. So that's sort of my feeling about that. I think there are a lot of opportunities for the public to have input in general through things like emails or contact, you know, calling their counselor. And I do think it would be worthwhile to have it for the budget process because that's such a big specific thing, but other, like as a general thing, I don't think we need that.
Okay. And I'm going to recognize the president, but before I do, I want to recognize that Councilor Bowman has joined us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
President Albright.
Yeah, so I think there is value in having some public comment on the budget, but I also think there's value in letting people speak. And I don't know whether it's before every meeting or quarterly or monthly or some organized way and time to give people a chance to speak. I think that, you know, over the years, I've watched that people come to our meetings and they sit there and they can't speak. They can email us, but they can't speak. And I think they get frustrated by that. So if we could find a way that wasn't every meeting to give people a chance to speak, I think it would be useful. And I don't know what that is, but I would love to hear if anybody else has an idea.
I'll report that Councillor Krentzman and Councillor Bowman, and I'll make it just a legal comment about some of this. Yeah,
thanks. I'm glad we're talking about this as well. I actually think sort of like President Albright said about emails, I think that has given folks an opportunity to weigh in on many more issues than they otherwise would have. So I have appreciated that feedback. I think I'm less inclined to try to push for, you know, a public comment period at every meeting or on every issue or even the budget, because I think there is opportunity for folks to weigh in. But I will say this, one thing that came up when the Charter Commission was meeting and we were talking about public comments was I think what President Albright touched on, which is a frustration of people to sit around at the meetings, even if it's a meeting where there is public comment, and not know when they're going to have a chance to speak and what that opportunity is going to be, and a frustration about having to sit through a lot of other things. And so what I would support is us putting in some language about if a committee or the city council is going to be taking public comments, that they be as explicit as possible in the agenda to provide notice to the public about when that public comment period will be, you know, and an indication of when to expect the ability for them to participate in the meeting. Because I think that will go a long way towards some of the frustration that I think President Albright articulated.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Bowman.
Yeah, so I think maybe a combination of what Councillor Quinsman just said, I think every agenda ought to say if there's public comment or not. And even if it seems repetitive, I'm imagining there are a number of people who have an issue that comes up and they want to know how to give, and there's always public comment, right? It's just not always at the meeting. So every agenda ought to say, if you would like to comment on this item, you may write X, you know, write the committee head or whatever, write the whole city council. And this is the email address. It's not that hard. We can just say it at the top of every agenda as a standard. If you, or there will be time to speak at the meeting, and this is how you do that. Or there, and if there's not going to be a comment, because I think there's an assumption by a lot of people that there's a comment at every meeting, it could say there is no public comment, or there will be no, you know. So I just think a statement on every agenda, because, you know, just let's make it as easy as possible for people to know what to do. That would be.
So two quick things. One is that, as you may recall, the Charter does have an explicit provision to allow for a public hearing on an item if citizens of a certain number petition for it. It's been rarely used, but it has occurred in the past. The other thing I would think is worth at least talking and thinking about is how the public comment is operated, both for the discretionary public comment by the chair, entertained by the chair, but also a little bit about the public hearing process, because I think people come to a public hearing sometimes and don't know exactly how that's done and how you sign up. In the old days, when we were in the chamber, you would actually come in and have a pad of paper where you would sign your name, and then you would be recognized in the order, and the clerk would come get the piece of paper and carry it over to the chair, and the chair would read the name, and then they would go on from there. But now in Zoom, how people sort of sign up is, I think, a little bit of a technological mystery. So maybe President Albright can tell us, or others who know how to do that. Yeah, Councillor Bowman.
I have a comment too about that little paper sign up. I really appreciated near the end where we had the process to where it wasn't out super early. Like there was a point where it was like, say, maybe out at 6 o'clock, and so people would show up. And, you know, people who have time to show up at 6 o'clock would sign up, and they take, you know, so the, you know, the young working parent who's rushing over is, you know, getting there, and they're the 100th person in line. So, you know, I think that there's something to say about that making that process if they're going to sign up. But that's much bigger. But I do think that we could just standardize so people would know, they look at the agenda, can I speak at the meeting? If I can speak at the meeting, how's that going to work? And if I can't speak at the meeting, who do I email to share my comments?
Okay. Thank you. President Albright.
So back in the day, which is like three years ago, I think it was Mark Laredo, or I'm not sure who started it, and it might have been at Land Use, but he started, instead of having a sign up, he would say, okay, everybody on this side of the room will start from front to back, and everybody on that side of the room will do back to front. And there was no sign up anymore, and other chairs started doing it the same way. So I think we should decide how to do that. Is You have to sign your name, or are you just going to just sit anywhere and see what happens?
Well, is this sort of like wedding the bride and the groom side, you know? And
sort of, but it was random. Okay, this way, this week I'll start at the end, back of the room on this side.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a comment. This is worth some more time than we may have tonight to solve, but I think the idea of regularizing the public comment process and making it clear so that when it does occur, people know what's expected, I think would be useful, which is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't hear sentiment in the committee, and I guess I would share that view that having automatic public comment is not, in my judgment, wise. I think we need to do it on a case by case or agenda by agenda basis, depending on what it is. Okay, so we'll, if we can just carry on for a bit just to see where we are. Now, committee reports. I'm long enough in the process here that I remember the Jurassic Age when the committee reports were actually prepared by the chairs. And that was, having done it multiple times myself, I can testify what a challenge it is, because you have to take the comments and put them together. And having the clerks do the draft, I think, is really important, although they're signed by the chair. The question in my agenda was just, they're out. If there's an error, how do we correct those, or what do we do? I can just report as a matter of process. When I've seen an error, I've communicated informally to the chair, and the chair's either announced the correction or fixed it so that it's not a problem. But, there's always a question about, we are approving the item at the council, but not necessarily the report. And so any thoughts about how the committee actions and reports are communicated and verified? So let me take, I can't tell which hands go up first, so this is a problem for me, apologies. But let me start with Josh, if I can, just because I can see
he's
that.
The most important, yeah, I agree. sorry.
You're on the left.
Lyle, I think if you go to your participants tab on the right, they will be in order, not the hands on the screen, but in they will be sequential in the participants tab.
I see. Okay. Thank you. That's all right.
Yeah. What I wanted to say was, I think we should clarify in the rules that the clerk's office has the responsibility to prepare the report in collaboration with the chair of the committee. I think that's the way it works. I think we agree that it's a good system. In fact, I think you indicated that a lot of the meeting schedule is designed around having time to prepare the reports.
Yeah.
And while I'm interested in revisiting the schedule, let's acknowledge that it does take time to prepare the reports, and we will all keep that in mind. One thing I have found odd, though, is that it sort of serves as a final record of the meeting without ever being approved by the committee. Every committee I've been a part of approves the minutes, sort of at the subsequent meeting, or at least at some point, after they're prepared. And I wonder, whether we as a council want to entertain a similar process, either through our committee structure or at the full council, or, when the reports become official. But at some point, does the council want to actually sort of put a stamp on it and say, this is, we acknowledge this is an official record of the proceedings.
Okay. Councillor Noel.
I agree with Councillor Crinsman that there should be some sort of check and balance, since in some ways the narrative that gets created in the report is almost more powerful than the meeting, because more people are going to read it. The question I had was, I've been at this now, I'm in my fourth year, I'm always struck by the fact that the reports never attribute the comments to any single counselor. And I'm assuming that's by design, but I'm just curious what the thinking is behind that. Cause I think who asked the question has some importance.
I can comment on that, but it's a fair question. Let me just go down the list and then come back to that, if that's all right.
Sure.
President Albright.
So I can comment on that as well. That was David. It's changed under David Olson. And he said, this is what he said, because the League of Women Voters constantly complains about this. They say they want a record of which counselor said what, and it's impossible to tell given the way the reports are done. But David said, these are reports, not minutes. And he felt strongly that the way we're doing it now is the way we should do it. So, I mean, if people feel strongly the other way, this is something we should talk over with the new clerk.
Can I just respond to that for a minute?
Sure.
I do think that they are, I remember him saying that, and I think that makes sense. You know, that because reports don't have to be verbatim. But it seems like in the report, an awful lot of effort is used with pronouns and everything to keep it generic. And it seems like, so I would imagine reports and minutes, reports are summaries, minutes are, is verbatim. But I would think attributing a comment to a counselor could fall under the purview of a report. It seems like a light lift. But, you know, it's not a hill I want to die on, but I do think it is relevant who's asking the question.
Okay. And Counselor Bowman? You're muted. Your hand was up. Maybe she's taking her hand down. I will say that I lived under both regimes, and where the names were in, and the names are just become C as counselors. And I do think David's point is true, because what we're really trying to do is figure out the action of the committee. And the tapes are there, and so there's always that record. And I think it makes the reports easier to generate, because if somebody misunderstands which counselor spoke, and then that gets, you know, then you get in the correction process. So I think I tend to agree with David, being persuaded by the experience of both systems, that this makes sense. But I understand that the concern. What about just the correction process? Anybody have any views on that? We need to have it in the rules, or just leave it to, if there's an error, to communicate to the chair? And if there's a disagreement, I've rarely seen that happen. In my experience, if there's an error, the chair has always been willing to fix it. So I'm not concerned myself.
Lyle, I think it may be informed by how final is a report. Do we need to put, you know, some sort of a warning or a note, like, you know, this is just a report, but please don't consider it an official record of the proceedings, or something along those lines? Because I feel like we are sort of all relying on it as minutes. But I hear what you guys are saying, that it's a report, it's not minutes. And maybe that's why it's less specific. It's not approved by the body. But I think it's not clear that they're not minutes.
Yeah, I think part of the reason is that the council actions are specifically the ordinances and resolutions we take. All the background that goes up to them is informational, but legally what matters is what we actually vote. So I think some clarification about this and how people can find out if they're curious about something and so forth is worth doing. And it may not require rules, but one of the things that I'm just speaking for myself, I think may grow out of this is kind of a little more of a, you know, I did my program on counselors at work, and there was a section I did one show specifically on the rules and all of that. And that a little bit of an explanation for the public about how the council operates, again, might not be a bad idea to have available in some form, not a rule. You know, nobody's going to read the rules, but okay, here's how the council operates. Here's what goes on. If you want to figure out where things are, here's the map of the process and so forth. We've done that a little bit with special permits in the past, but I think it's probably worth thinking about for the council again.
So can I relate the conversation? There was somebody, and I remember the details. I could probably find it in my email. Someone who became chair of one of our committees or commissions, a newly appointed chair, and he wrote me an email saying, where are your minutes? Because someone told me, you know, I should go and look for what you've done on X, Y, and Z. And he said, I can't find your minutes. And so I explained to him that they are the reports and where to find them. And he sent me chapter and verse from state law, that what we are required to do by state law. And I'm not sure that we actually are meeting that. So I can find it because it's in my email somewhere.
Well, if you'll find it and send it to me, I'll take a look at it and maybe bring it back up next time.
Okay, I'll find it.
Yeah, but I think a map independent of the law may be helpful. If I can just move down the agenda a bit, the council action, we have the process of first call, second call, and then I think it has been a practice to ask people if they're putting an item on second call to notify the clerk and the chair and the president, you know, but I don't hear a sentiment that we should preclude something from going on second call if someone hears something during the meeting. But I think as a matter of efficiency, it's certainly helpful for people to know something's coming, just so that if the chair is giving a report, they know that they've got to be a little more robust about it than they would otherwise.
I agree.
But does that accord with what your view?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. If you're agreeable, let's talk about some of the things in the annotated version, and I'll see if I can. We've got about half an hour. Let's just see what we can get done if we can. We've talked about some of these in terms of jurisdiction. There's a piece that we haven't discussed, which is where does IT belong? And President Albright, do you want to say a word about that? Because you were the one, I think, who raised that initially.
Yeah. So in the early days of information technology, it was all about administration and finance, and it made sense probably for it to report to finance. But the way technology should be used, and in fact really sort of is starting to be more used, is that it really should be as a support for the departments to help them do what they need to do in general, not just on finance and administrative stuff. So, I mean, maybe programs and services is the place where it should go. Because we think about the departments and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Some of the departments anyway, but it makes no sense to me that to have it to go to finance. And I don't know beyond programs and services, I don't know where else to send it, but your thoughts would be welcome.
Thoughts? I'm sympathetic to that idea because I think it's become now, as you say, less sort of a back room exercise and more fabric of what we're doing. So to have it report to a committee that has a fairly wide range of jurisdiction where technology matters so much and so many of the agencies in which we're involved, it seems to me that could make some sense. But how do other members of the subcommittee feel? Anybody care? If not, I'll just make that as a recommendation and we'll go on from there.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay. And then, by the way, I just should say that I was very impressed with the work that went into trying to get us into a combination, a kind of a hybrid version of the world of inside and outside that we heard from New TV the other night. We talked about the timing of items already, but I'm going to come back to that in a little bit after we get that sorted out.
Just a suggestion, since Councillor Bowman is here, I know she wanted to talk about the PS&T stuff that we discussed last time. That's why she's here. So
I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
That, yeah.
Councillor Bowman, you want to? We talked about whether transportation should be separated from public safety, but left it where it was for the moment because public works deals with the streets and public safety deals with the regulation of their operations. But you want to be heard on that question? Thank you, Councillor Humphrey. Maybe we can ask her when she comes back.
I think she's listening to another meeting that's happening simultaneously. She had communicated to me, and this is her opinion, not my, I don't, you know enough to have a strong view at this point, but her view expressed to me was that all of the road stuff should be moved out of public facilities and into PS&T, which is the opposite of what we had talked about in the subcommittee last time. So the suggestion there being that it is the committee that has transportation in the name. The road stuff is a transportation issue, and that public facilities, you know, does have to deal with a bunch of other stuff involving buildings and things that are actually, you know, people would think of as public facilities. But that all the roads related matters should be incorporated in both transportation and obviously public safety being in the title as well. Oh, she's back.
That's a fair question.
You're on mute, Councillor Bowman.
Councillor Bowman.
Sorry, I'm trying to listen to two meetings at once. It's a little challenging. Sorry about that.
You're better than the rest of us. Good for you.
Sorry, I have this other meeting going on. Okay, so I absolutely, if you're saying that, you know, I think the roads, and I've always thought this, the roads are in the wrong location. I think they need more attention. It's a very large budget item. They're complicated, and they are transportation. So if part of PS&T is supposed to be dealing with transportation issues, then I really do think that it's less of a public facilities issue and more of a transportation issue. And it's interesting because it's also the group that handles appeals from traffic council. So if something goes to traffic council and gets appealed, doesn't get appealed to public facilities, gets appealed to public safety and transportation. So,
well, that's an interesting idea. I think it's a new one to me, but it doesn't mean it can't thought about. This is one place where I might, if we could hold it and hear a little bit from some of the chairs of public facilities, because I think this is part of the roads and sewers and, you know, all the infrastructure piece are still in public facilities. You wouldn't want to bring pipes and sewers over, obviously, but the transportation.
I think there are different people within DPW who deal with it. I don't think they generally, like, you know, occasionally there might be a project where we're talking about all the things at the same time, but the types of things where we're talking about TNI, the, you know, transportation network, and we're prioritizing which roads are getting paved and what's going to happen to them, to, you know, where sidewalks going in and what are the outcome of complete streets. This is really the fundamental things that make our, you know, that fix the transportation issues that we have. And it was a perfect example last 2 weeks ago in public safety and transportation, we were talking about addressing, issues of traffic calming and making our community more walkable and more bikeable. And over in public facilities, they were talking about how they're going to spend money to redo the roads. And those are conversations that need to be happening at the same time with the same group of people, because we can't make the street safer if we're not fixing it as part of the process of repaving. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Fair concern. So I'm going to just hold that unless Councillor Albright, you have any thoughts?
Can I just add to that? Because I think that's why what Jake said was it needs its own committee because Public Safety and Transportation Committee never deals with public transportation. I mean, there's so much going on around us about the Green Line and the Worcester Line, and we're not doing anything. We're not saying anything. The mayor wrote a letter, but we haven't done anything. So we
wrote a letter.
I know.
We wrote a letter.
I know, but yeah.
But
we should be focusing, you know, I've been talking to Kay Khan, but where's the plan that they were supposed to show us last April for the redo? We need to have a strong transportation, and maybe it needs its, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but it does need a more focus than we're giving it.
So I think part of that problem for the city council, like when I wrote the letter in support of, you know, against the cuts, I got pushback from city councilors that that's not our job. Huh. We don't have a role in public transportation. The public transportation is the mayor's issue and the state issue, and we don't control. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not listening to you. I think that it needs goals. It needs focus. And again, like what's happening with public transportation really fits into the greater transportation conversation. Like, bike share is going to make public transportation more possible because people can get that last mile, and it's going to make it more functional. That's what we've learned about bike share. And even on the federal level, they're beginning to think about bike share being able to be reimbursed as part of or funded in the same way that they fund whole public transportation systems, because it's really part of the systems. 50 million rides last year on bike share. So, you know, I think they all have to come together.
Well, as the former chairman of the Bicycle Subcommittee of the Environment Committee of the Boston Bar Association in 1973,
wow,
I'm all in favor of that.
Excellent.
I used to ride my bike to work, but never mind. Anyway, okay, I think that's a useful comment. Just as a process matter, what may happen as a result of our conversations is that as we get through this work, we may have a few issues where we may want to at least let the rest of the council know that we're cooking on something that they may be interested in, and at least let them weigh in with us a bit before we decide what we're going to recommend. So that may be one of them, but I appreciate the thought about that that went into that. Okay, let me just keep going here. A question about chair's notes. President Albright, you want to say a word about chair's notes?
I think I said a lot of words about it already, but so chair's notes are so unofficial that they get lost. And when you take an important subject like housing choice and you put it in chair's note, it's gone and never to be seen again. You can never find it in there. I mean, not that our search engine is great anyway, but this docket database that I'm working with the IT department to create, it will list all the docket items. It doesn't know what to do with chair's notes. So, and I think the chairs are amenable to creating these docket items instead of using chair's notes. Okay. So I think we may have solved that problem.
All right. But I think it's probably important to memorialize the idea that you need a docket item to discuss something in order to have it appear on the record.
It's in the rules already.
Maybe
we can strengthen it.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe we should have a rule that says you have to follow the rules.
Okay, let's do
it. What a radical idea. There's some changes of language that are, I don't think, controversial just about the process. Now, appointees and reappointees. Several people asked about that. I think both Councillor Kretzmann and Councillor Albright were interested in that. You want to say a word about that, President Albright? Sorry.
Well, I think Josh is the one who has most to say about it. You go first.
You know, I don't have a lot to say about it, but I'm not fully, you know, I want to have the conversation. I'm not sort of fully formed in the way I think it should go, but I spoke with Councillor Baker about this, and he talked about the fact that the current procedures we have of sort of thoroughly vetting and requiring appointees to come before the committees came out of the fact that it used to be appointees and reappointees were required to come, and it was taking an awful lot of council time. I think if I mischaracterize this, Councillor Baker, please set me straight. And so as a way to sort of save some time and save some work for the council, a decision was made, or, you know, the sort of prevailing wisdom was to evaluate appointees on their initial appointment. And then a reappointee didn't necessarily have to come before the committee. I don't know that the rules are clear that that's the case. I think the rules could be rewritten no matter what we decide. But having said that, I started to think that it might make more sense to have reappointees come before us as opposed to appointees, because at that point they actually have some experience under their belt. We could actually talk about what they had done in their time on the committee. They would have a better understanding of the work of the committee. And might be able to have a more informed discussion with the counselors about the work that was transpiring and how they were working. But, you know, because my experience has been that in an initial appointment, we sort of say, thank you very much for your willingness to do this. And, you know, let's move it along. This is wonderful. But I throw that out there to others. What do you think?
Well, let me just give a bit of historical reference. Part of the reason I suspect that this was the practice is that the Programs and Services Committee itself, of which we are a part, in past used to spend an entire evening just going through reappointments, you know, night after night. And we had limited time sometimes to do other things. And I think there was a concern that those were most often, you know, we cheered people on, said thank you for coming, but they had to tell their story over and over again. So there is, I think that economy of time was one of the reasons for the sort of modified process. I guess my preference would be to maintain the current process, but again, say that if there's a reappointment coming up and someone would like to hear from that person, that certainly, like second call, a committee member can say, I would like to hear from the, you know, the newly appointed or the reappointed members of this, of the Council on Aging or something, so that we can hear what their experience has been. I think that's a conversation that can happen with the chair and they can come in, but I guess my preference is not have that be the default, but other views, if any, or Councillor Noel.
So I understand what Councillor Crinsman's trying to solve for, because I do think time is really limited. I think what's really challenging is all of this stuff is really important. You know, it doesn't seem important until it is, meaning like sometimes these appointments seem sort of like low-lying fruit and does it really matter? But then it does matter, you know, especially when they're making big decisions or influencing policy. And so I'm just going to throw it out there. I know it's not going to go anywhere, but it just goes back to the fact that in a lot of ways, this job could be full-time, you know, and it's tough that we're really working on a quasi part-time situation here when we have a really big city of 90,000 people and we have a lot of work to do. So it's hard because sometimes these appointments become a really big deal. So I would hate to rubber stamp an initial appointment. But I also feel as someone who has a very big full-time job and is a parent, I'm exhausted. So I get it. But I don't know what the solution is other than, reworking the whole system, which we tried.
Well, I can tell you that if there's a motion made to imitate the salary of the Boston City Council and the staff for each of us, that would be a really entertaining conversation.
But absolutely. I would love to not work two full-time jobs.
So moved.
Yeah, this is the only job I've ever actually enjoyed.
Well, this is good. Well,
I think that's really important. And I think time is of, there's not enough hours in the day because we're doing this on nights and weekends.
Yeah. So. Well, we are still, for better or for worse, considered a citizen, you know, legislature. That's, not professionals. Okay. I think I'm going to leave the way it is, but maybe have a comment so our colleagues can keep track of where we are, but we'll see that, let me talk about one of the questions of the council meetings. We meet at 7:45, and other meetings have started at 7. I just have to disclose, I'm one of the fans of the 7:45 because it's one of the few times I can have dinner and, you know, not rush through it. But this is a rule, not a charter, I think. I don't think the charter says 7:45. So we have the discretion to make a change in the rule. The reason I think it has served us reasonably well in the past has been that there have been multiple times in my experience where an item needs to be heard by a committee before the council as a late matter. Something has to be done, either budgetary or otherwise, and you need to get the committees together before the council can meet. And so having the ability to meet at 7 o'clock for a short meeting and then come into the council chamber has served us well. If we did it at 7 for the council, then we have to move people back like this meeting. And I think that, again, to put the point you just made about having other lives, makes it harder. So I personally would like to leave it the way it is and let the committee meeting start at 7, which I, you know, I'm a grudging convert, I guess, because it means I can go to bed a little earlier. But there we are. So any comments on that? John, yeah. Councilor President. Yeah.
So my feeling on this is that you know, sometimes 7:45 works and other times it might make more sense to start at 7. We know there are going to be some controversial items or things like that. So I actually am not sure why the rules actually specify the timing of the meeting. I would rather, you know, leave it up to the discretion of the president to schedule. I think it's okay to say that it's on, you know, the first and third Monday. I think that makes sense. But I would have no problem making it sort of leaving the rule without specifying so that it is discretionary and the president can determine whether a meeting is going to be needed beforehand or whether we can start at 7:45 or whether we can start at 7 or we start at 6:30, again, on the night that's predetermined. But, you know, similarly to the way chairs of committees sometimes say, let's try and start earlier, provide adequate notice, of course. But, you know, I don't know why we need to be so regimented in the rules on this one.
Okay. Councillor Humphrey?
I think it would be reasonable to add that discretionary flexibility. If I had to pick a time, I would probably go with 7, although I recognize the arguments that you made for why we sometimes need to have that extra buffer time in there. I would also note, you know, we've mentioned a couple other times that there is some procedural stuff. I mean, it usually only takes about 15 minutes, but there is some procedural stuff that maybe is kind of wasting the public's time, if not our own time, that happens at the beginning of the meetings that could be perhaps done in another way. And so one potential compromise option here would be to say that, you know, the chairs come and read something into the record at, I don't know, 7:30, and then, you know, the actual stuff starts at 7:45 or something like along those lines.
Councillor Crispin?
Yeah, I don't want to take us off topic, but while we're talking about the timings of meetings, I think it would make complete sense to remove the mandatory recess in between first and second call and leave that discretionary, you know, leave the default that there is no recess. We're going to proceed through our business. But if at any point anyone needs a recess, 5 minutes, 10 or otherwise, that they should, you know, make a motion as such.
Well, let me, if I can just interject, or no, President Albright, do you want to say?
Not on this topic, so go ahead.
Okay, let me just explain why, when I was president, I found the recess a really valuable piece of work, because what it did was, it's harder to do in this context, because we're all on Zoom, but in the actual council meetings, when there was an item that was put on second call, it was often very helpful to have a conference during the recess between the president, the chair, and the person who put it on second call to try and see exactly what the nature of the conversation would be going forward and the timing of various things. So I can just say that when I was acting as president, it really made enabled the rest of the council meeting to be, I think, a lot more efficient because we had the break and the recess, and that was sort of there as opposed to saying I need a recess. But that's, I just report my own experience. I don't know what President Albright's view is.
So I wasn't going to speak on that, but I'll just say that most of my term has been on Zoom. I think we were only in the chamber for a couple of months. So you can't do a recess on Zoom. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, Lyle, I will say, I think that makes sense, and I understand that, and I think you've explained that to me before, and that did make sense. I will say that I think we have made some other efforts to try and give a little bit more notice about which items are going to be on second call, providing a little bit more of an opportunity in advance of the meeting for those conversations to happen.
Yeah. And this is a fair point, and let's think about it some more, because I'm not done. And, you know, if somebody just waited, but I will just say that one feature of advanced age is that I welcome a break more frequently than I used to.
And you are free to make a motion at any time. Yes, if you're hinting that right now you need a break, I think, you know, we would all understand.
All right.
I don't know if you're going to take this up separately or not, but what Councillor Humphrey just said about, you know, the 15 minutes we spend doing first call reports, I've heard that so many times from lots of people. They say, we have no idea what you're talking about. We don't have the documentation. We don't know what it means. And yet we take 15 minutes to do it. So, I'm with Councillor Humphrey. If we can find another way to do first call reports, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Well,
you
go ahead.
Sorry, I would I agree about the problem, but I would sort of lean the other way on the solution, which is, I think given that we have the screen now in the chamber and a potential screen on Zoom, I think it would be helpful for people to see the items, right? And to see sort of what amounts to our agenda, right? But it's the docket. And if they could at least see the items that are coming up here, what we're reading off, I think it would orient them to what's happening. They may not have a complete understanding, but I think it would be a little bit better to help them go through that. Because again, I mean, it may go through unanimously on first call, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's unimportant.
Well, so just to clarify, you know,
recognize people when they, if you don't mind. That's all right. Okay.
So just to clarify what I was saying earlier, again, you know, it's not just about the, what we're voting on, right? It's also the, you know, the part about, oh, I need to schedule a public hearing and here are the new docket items, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of stuff probably doesn't need to be up on the screen or even necessarily read aloud if we can find some other way. I do think there is value to doing the first call items in some capacity, but again, that's something where you could potentially say, okay, we're going to do first call stuff at 7:30 and then the other stuff at 7:45 or something like that. I think there's room for some sort of a solution there.
Okay. So let me just take it that we want to think a little bit about how we inform the public of what we're doing without mystifying them. Right.
Right.
Okay.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So I think that gets us to a point where we could probably reasonably take a break before the next meeting, if that's agreeable to the members of the subcommittee. And we'll take this up again. Any item that someone wants to talk about before we do that, do break?
No, Lyle, I was going to suggest, though, that since we have, you have some language that, you know, Susan and I have shared to possibly update the rules, that we might be able to work off of a draft of the rules next time and go sort of start to finish with these notes in there of the things that we've either decided or, you know, decided to leave as questions.
I was hoping to go. I was just trying to talk my way through it first.
Sorry.
Let's see where that's where I want to be at least at one meeting where we're talking through specific language changes. So that say, okay, this is where we came out, I think, and everybody happy with this language or whatever. Because, you know, concepts are fine, but they've got to be turned into language. So, all right. Any last comments anyone has? Yeah, Councilor
Hopper. I just wanted to get a sense of when we're going to deal with the pledge thing that I had put in as a suggested change.
Well, let's talk about it briefly now, just because I don't want to lose it. And we're going to meet again. I'd certainly take it up next time. But you just want to, because it's not reflected in the notes right now. Nathan, let's make sure that's in there next time, if you would. Do you want to just say, remind us all about the...
Yeah, so the basic proposed change there, again, which has to do with, you know, how we open the meetings and the time that we're taking, et cetera, is to change that instead to a discretionary thing at the for the presiding officer, and that they would, instead of doing the pledge, do something like either a moment of silence or some sort of a commendation type of thing to honor or memorialize somebody from Newton or whatever. I know I'm not the only person on the council who is not thrilled about having the Pledge of Allegiance be part of the official proceedings. I might be the only one who's actually saying that out loud, but I know that other people have mentioned it to me, and I know that some people are not comfortable with having that there. And this just seems like a more neutral option. And it also, I don't know, it got really sort of metaphysical when we started doing the Pledge of Allegiance to a digital photograph of the flag in the chamber. And I just thought, you know what, this is getting a little bit silly, and I would like us to revisit, you know, an alternative to that.
I will report that this became part of our process. I think Councilor Albright was there. Remember that we had a whole conversation around this issue that became part of the rules. So that made me think.
I remember it as being part of the rules, and we weren't doing it.
Yeah.
And the citizens objected to it.
Was this like right after 9/11 or what?
It was around that time, I think. But we'd have to go back double check. But thank you. Let's hold that, and we'll try and talk about it next time.
All right.
Okay. All right. Colleagues, I appreciate it. And thank you all for your time. And we will see you in 5 minutes in another Zoom room, right?
Okay. Yep.
See you in five.
Okay. See you all shortly.
Bye-bye.